Folks, this is the War Room. We're going to get into what's going on with Iran here in just a second, but I want to go to a very powerful video of a Chicago resident standing up to the mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, and basically just holding him to task for lying to the people of Chicago over and over. This is a beautiful thing, and I'm seeing more and more stuff like this, so I just want to celebrate and spread it. Let's watch.
First, I actually just want to apologize on behalf of Brandon Johnson for ignoring the young lady that was just speaking there, for speaking for the animals' rights. And let me continue here. I was watching one of your recent videos of you saying that you never told a lie. So you raised property taxes when you promised you wouldn't. You promised that crime would go down when it's not. Reports of crime is down, though, but not crime within itself. I just want to let everybody know that. Crime itself is not down. Nobody voted for you to fund illegal migrants, Brandon Johnson. And we know this is happening because Melissa Hortman, a Democrat in Minnesota, voted against funding for illegal migrants. The only Democrat, by the way. And she was murdered for it. She was murdered, actually, by someone who was appointed by Tim Walz, sir. So I just want you guys to think about that as well. So we know this is happening, which is the main reason why the president is withholding federal funds in Chicago, because he is afraid that you will fund illegal migrants. And honestly, I'm afraid that you will do that too. How are you going to allow 9 janitors to be fired when you have 150 police detail and that costs you $22 million a year? You can't cut a few cops to save a few jobs? You mean to tell me your safety is that important, Brandon Johnson? Absolutely disgraceful. Instead, you want to hang out with a China-loving, dog-shocking communist like Hassan Piker. Why are you streaming, dude? People are out here dying. I'm serious. You was just on 79th, right? You saw 2 dozen shots get let off. People are dying out here. You don't got time to stream. Do you understand that? And I'm being serious, dude. Absolutely disgraceful. You want to defund the police, and your executive order means nothing. You cannot hold federal agents accountable, bro. It's called supremacy clause. That means federal law is the highest law of the land, okay? The executive order that you signed, that was a waste of time and ink, if I'm being honest with you. So we are American patriots. We are Chicago patriots. How many people have to die because of your poor leadership? Watchdogs has recently found that we are actually $41.1 billion in debt. It's not even 1.5. So where is all the money going, Mr. Brandon Johnson? We want to know that. And I know it's Black History Month, ladies and gentlemen, but Brandon Johnson, you got to stop being racist, dude. Like, this is a problem, man. Everybody is people. We all shed red blood. I understand that, you know, tribalism is a thing and stuff like that, but we are all the same in the eyes of God, Brandon Johnson. Stop.
Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant and powerful. And again, just like obvious to anybody that's paying attention, that the glaring hypocrisy of the Democrat government. He's got 150 police officers for his personal detail, but then they're cutting janitors' jobs to save money. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. And I love that he called out Hassan Abi. What do you call him? Or Hassan, whatever his name is. Chenk's nephew. We know him as Chenk's nephew. China-loving, dog-abusing Hassan. Yeah. So can we just, like, what do we need to do? What do we need to do as Americans who agree on all of this? Like, what do we need to do to free ourselves from these people? I'm not talking about left or right. I'm talking about what do we as Americans, me and that dude, like, I don't care what else we disagree with. We're clearly on the same page of the abject corruption of the political system and the existential need to free ourselves from it. What can we do to come together? What can we do to free ourselves from these people? Because everybody who's paying attention knows that this is the case, that guy's exactly right. Brandon Johnson is a despicable liar.
Introducing Ultra DNA Revival, the advanced daily supplement designed to help you feel and perform at your absolute best, starting at the cellular level. Backed by cutting-edge mitochondrial and DNA support science, Ultra DNA Revival delivers noticeable all-day energy without stimulants or crashes, faster recovery and greater endurance, sharper focus and mental clarity, support for healthy blood sugar levels, stronger immune system function, enhanced liver health and natural detoxification, reduces everyday stress and anxiety, protection against oxidative stress, and the visible signs of aging. And again, this is a private label of an already best-selling brand that found this. Thousands of customers report feeling the difference in as little as 7 to 14 days. Right now, take advantage of our best pricing ever. VIP members, $34.95. Regular, $59.59. Save over 40% with a VIP membership for $30 a month. Experience the revival your body has been waiting for. Secure your DNA revival today at TheAlexShowStore.com.
No spin, no surrender. This is Harrison Smith on the War Room with live streams firing on X and Band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Let's talk about Iran, shall we? Rubio to brief lawmakers on Iran. Secretary of State Marco Rubio will brief top lawmakers today, on Iran as the administration weighs possible strikes, according to two people who granted anonymity to disclose the planned private meeting. The briefing will be held virtually, another person said, and will include House and Senate leadership, as well as top members of the House and Intelligence Committees. It will take place hours before President Trump is due to deliver his State of the Union speech at the Capitol. An earlier State Department advisory said the briefing would happen at the White House, but it was not on Trump's publicly released schedule. The administration has been building up U.S. forces in the Middle East as it mulls potential military action against Iran. Although Trump has not indicated he's made a final decision, he has warned of, quote, really bad things if a deal isn't reached with Tehran on its nuclear enrichment program. Trump's comments have sparked calls from some lawmakers to force a vote on a resolution that would require congressional authorization before the president could order the use of force against Iran. Representatives Ro Khanna and Thomas Massie had initially planned to force such a vote this week, but leadership now expects that to be delayed until next week or later, according to three people granted anonymity to discuss the scheduling. And of course, he is going to be giving a State of the Union tonight, and things are a little bit different than they were, as Politico notes, a defensive posture. Trump speaks to Congress on shakier ground than last year. But if I had to guess, if I had to speculate, I'd say, you know, he's going to receive half of the room's going to applaud whenever he talks about tariffs. Half the room's going to applaud whenever he talks about illegal immigration. And then the whole room is going to applaud when he talks about war with Iran. He talks about the danger of Iran. I have a feeling it's going to be the only time in the entire State of the Union where he gets full support from both sides of the aisle and all branches of government, because that's just how sick and retarded our entire system has become. Seven experts on the risk of wider war with Iran. This is from Politico. As the threat of U.S. strikes intensify, our experts weigh the risks of escalation. What Trump will not do is commit U.S. ground troops, is what they say. And that's always been my red line. And it's always been, you know, Trump's actions are in accordance to that. He doesn't want, you know, boots on the ground either. He's willing to do limited strikes, but I don't think he's exactly excited to have American servicemen die on his watch. And he's looking for a way to get this done without that possibility. But I don't think that's the case, especially the way that Iran is signaling it's prepared to respond. I mean, it has said that all American everything, all resources, everything in the Middle East is on the table. Not just, oh, you launched from there, so we'll attack there. But like, you launch from anywhere, we attack you anywhere. You also have China sending Iran aircraft carrier killing missiles, supersonic weapons that can zigzag in moments before impact, pose game-changing risk to U.S. forces. They also just launched their first ballistic missile launching vessel. So how's that going to work? So how are you going to attack them? How are you going to decapitate Iran without massive, unstoppable risk to American servicemen? I don't think you can. I really don't think you can. In the eight months since the Trump administration bombed an Iranian nuclear sites, the world has changed, and President Trump seems emboldened. He faced little blowback after his previous attack on Iran, and he's riding high after snatching Nicolas Maduro from Venezuela. Now Trump is amping up the pressure on Tehran to give up its nuclear program by deploying huge collections of fighter jets and warships to the Middle East, not seen since the Iraq War. If negotiations fail, Trump is threatening a massive attack, with the pursuit of regime change a possibility. Last year, we asked a series of experts to weigh in on how an attack on Iran might unfold. We've gone back to them to see if what we think of Trump's latest moves. The general consensus is that Trump may be about to take risks that are far less predictable and far more deadly than his previous gambits to reshape the globe. Ryan Crocker, a distinguished chair in diplomacy and security at RAND, basically says there will be no chickening out this time, saying it's highly unlikely that Iran will meet U.S. demands on zero enrichment, ballistic missiles, and or support for proxy forces. Tehran sees these as crucial underpinnings of regime legitimacy. To meet Washington's conditions would effectively mean the end of the Islamic Republic, which is why this is so stupid. It's literally a violation of, like, one of the first rules of war in from Sun Tzu. Like, you want to give your enemy an out. You want to give your enemy a way to escape, because if their back's against the wall, they fight a lot harder. So what they've done is basically backed Iran up against a wall and said, either surrender yourself, surrender everything, disarm yourself, or we're going to go to war. And so Iran is only incentivized to fight as hard as they possibly can. There is no incentive to negotiate. There's no incentive to trust the Trump administration whatsoever. So strategically, it's very stupid. The massive buildup of U.S. forces cannot be sustained indefinitely. There will not be a taco, Trump always chickens out, moment this time. In the absence of an agreement, President Donald Trump will take action, probably limited in the first instance, in an effort to coerce Iran into an agreement. When that doesn't work, and it won't, Trump will expand operations in an effort to decapitate the regime, including clerical and military leadership. This will require precise intelligence, which may be harder to obtain than it was in June. It's important that initial strikes comprehensively target Iran's missile capabilities. If Iran can, they will use them against U.S. allies and assets in the region, as well as Israel. What Trump will not do is commit U.S. ground forces. In the event of regime decapitation, this means U.S. will have no ability to control subsequent events. It's impossible to predict what will happen next. What we can say with confidence is that we will not see the emergence of a secular democracy led by the sons of the Shah. Far more likely would be the seizure of power by a group of unknown military officers and massive internal violence. President Trump operates without either clear objectives or strategy, according to Jonathan Panikoff. It's an unfortunate name. Dennis Ross says Trump is effectively playing chicken. Before President Donald Trump launched his strikes against the Fordo, Natanz, and Isfahan nuclear sites, the most important nuclear facilities infrastructure in Iran, I predicted that if he attacked only in a limited way, the conflict would be contained. But if the attack was wider and seen as being about regime change, it would escalate and not be containable. Though we've attacked all three sites, Trump's intent was limited to the nuclear program, and the Iranians responded much in the way they had to the killing of Qasem Soleimani. They signaled what they would do in advance of attacking the UDED base, letting U.S. limit the damage and conveying that they had no interest in escalation. So is that lesson that President Trump has learned? You can use force in a limited way for a limited objective, and Iran will respond in kind? And perhaps, but it is different this time. And again, it seems like we are betting a lot on the, I don't want to say cowardice of Iran, but like it's kind of that. And again, you can sort of look at this two ways. In one way, like if I was Iran, I don't know. I don't know how you can look at the trajectory that Iran, or that rather Israel and America has been on for the last couple of years, and not see the inevitability of an attack on Iran. Like, it's going to happen at some point. It did already happen in June, but it's only going to, like, they're not going to be satisfied until all of Iran is in abject chaos, or the Shah is, you know, returned to power and has to run a brutal tyranny to maintain that power. It's just, it's going to come. It's going to happen. It's like if I was Iran, I probably would have attacked during probably when they were like going after Venezuela. Probably when they went after Nicolas Maduro, I would have been like, all right, now's the time. The U.S. Navy isn't hanging around. They don't have a ton of focus here. Like, now's time to attack. Now we have all of these forces in the Middle East. It's going to be a hell of a lot harder to respond, but also they have a hell of a lot more targets to hit, so they'll be able to do a lot more damage to our resources in the area this time. So I don't know. Maybe it's a sort of either-or situation, but it seems to me like there's a lot riding on the fact that Iran is just not going to be the first to attack. And so far they haven't been, but like I really don't understand why not. I don't know. Strategically, I don't understand what they're waiting for, but I can only hope that it's because the talks are working in their favor. But the Trump team is not making it easy for themselves. Trump team on damage control after Huckabee's comments on Israel. Senior administration officials have called Arab officials to explain that a Huckabee comment that Israel can control much of the Middle East did not signal a policy shift. Well, no. That is the policy, but that's always been the policy. That wasn't a shift. It was just said out loud for the first time. That was the mistake. So this does not represent a policy shift. It's like, yeah, we know. Senior Trump administration officials have called around to several Arab countries in recent days to mollify their concerns. Right after Ambassador to Israel Mike Huckabee claimed Israel has the right to control much of the Middle East. In the discussions, officials, including Deputy Secretary of State Chris Landau, Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs Alison Hooker, and others, have explained to concerned countries that Huckabee's assertion in a podcast interview with Tucker Carlson reflects his personal views and is not a shift in administration policy. According to three people familiar with the outreach who were granted anonymity to discuss sensitive diplomatic discussions, the State Department itself did not respond to a request to comment. Huckabee's interview has sparked outrage among Arab and Muslim countries, and his comments were a significant departure from the Trump administration's stance on Israeli sovereignty. President Donald Trump has promised Arab and Muslim leaders he would not let Israel annex the West Bank. But of course, they are annexing the West Bank. Again, it's like our relationship with Israel just screws us at every level. Constantly. Why we're even talking about this stuff is because it benefits Israel. But then it's like, we want to promise them things, and we don't have the ability to fulfill those promises because Israel acts with complete impunity and complete disregard for America's demands. I mean, Donald Trump has said publicly in no uncertain terms, they will not annex the West Bank. What is Israel doing? Annexing the West Bank. So what do you think it looks like when Trump tells Iran, Israel will not attack you if you agree to this? The Iranian people are thinking, you don't have a say in that. You are not able to control what Israel's doing. You can't promise us that because you have no way to make sure it's true. Because you're either incapable or unwilling to ever limit the actions of Israel. So we can't negotiate because of our relationship with Israel. We can't make promises to, you know, protect people that we're negotiating with because Israel will just kill them and we don't do anything about it. We can't even stop them from annexing the West Bank, which is in just flagrant violation of human rights across the board and international treaties and the laws of war and basic decency and their promises to support and protect Christians that they constantly reiterate in an effort to trick evangelicals into thinking they're the good guys. It's like, what is the benefit again? What are we getting out of this? Just screwed over and made to look like fools? Okay, great. U.S.-Iran talks are expected to happen Friday if Iran sends nuclear proposals soon. U.S. and Iranian negotiators are expected to meet in Geneva on Thursday to discuss a detailed Iranian proposal for a nuclear deal. A senior U.S. official told Axios on Sunday morning the Trump administration expects to receive the proposal by today, Tuesday. The current diplomatic push is likely the last chance President Trump will give Iran before launching a massive U.S.-Israeli military operation that could directly target Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, U.S. officials say. The Iranian foreign minister, Araghchi, told CBS's Face the Nation that expects to meet Trump's envoy Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner in Geneva on Thursday. Witkoff and Kushner both advised Trump to give the diplomacy a chance before ordering a strike. It's being reported that Trump is growing frustrated with the limits of Iranian military operation. Unlike previously targeted operations, including the one to remove Nicolas Maduro from power, Mr. Trump has been told that any strike on Tehran's assets would almost certainly be a singular decisive blow. Instead, limited strikes could open the door to a wider confrontation, one that risks drawing the United States into a protracted conflict in the Middle East. President Trump, in a social media post, refuted any reports that General Dan Kane, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, is against us going to war with Iran. Kane, he said, would like not to see war, but if the decision is made on going against Iran at a military level, it is his opinion that it will be something easily won. Mr. Trump said Kane, quote, has not spoken of not doing Iran or even the fake limited strikes that I've been reading about. He only knows one thing, how to win, and if he is told to do so, he will be leading the pack. So I saw people comment on this because we covered yesterday how reportedly Dan Kane, the head general, told Trump, like, this is not going to be a limited thing. If you go to war with Iran, it's going to be long and protracted and a lot of people are going to die. And then I had people sending me this Trump tweet going like, see, that was fake news. That's not what it sounds like to me. It's not all what it sounds like to me. It sounds like Trump said, okay, this guy doesn't really want war. He does think it's a bad idea, but if I give the order, he'll follow it. It's like, okay, that was never up for debate. It was never a question of Dan Kane's willingness to go to war with Iran. It was whether or not he told Trump that war with Iran would be devastating and frankly a bad idea for the military readiness of America. After all, Iran cannot hurt us really right now. There are lots of places that can. There are lots of countries that we're enemies with, like China, that does have an ability and a desire to do us harm. And is it so smart to literally destroy, waste God only knows how many planes and soldiers' lives and aircraft carriers to go after Iran, a country that does not have the capability to hurt us? So we're going to massively weaken our military posture. We're going to massively just destroy a huge number of our military in a pursuit of something that literally does not threaten us, cannot threaten us. They don't have a missile that could hit us. They don't have nuclear weapons. They don't have aircraft carriers menacing our shores. Like they just, unless they're hitting the bases that we put there to menace them, they don't hold a candle to us. They don't threaten us at all. China does. Russia does. These other places do. Like, this is the crazy thing. If you were China or Russia, you'd be begging America to attack Iran. Right? If you hated America, wouldn't your number one piece of advice be to attack Iran? If you're Russia or China and you're looking for a way to massively hamper the American military, to do severe damage to them, in the same way that, you know, we use Ukraine to attack Russia, and it's like this brilliant, you know, Lindsey Graham thinks it's this, you know, amazing idea. They're like, oh, we don't have to spend any of our lives. We just have the Ukrainians kill Russians for us. I'm sure Russia and China feel that way about Iran. Yeah, go attack Iran. They'll fire their ballistic missiles. Maybe Iran falls at the end of the day, but we'll do a hell of a lot of damage to America in the meantime. And as soon as the whole conflict between Russia and America and Iran comes to an end, they'll be bruised and bloody and easy pickings for the Chinese or Russian military. Or maybe they'll just get involved right out from the outset. Maybe as soon as we attack Iran, they'll attack Taiwan. Maybe Russia will attack NATO. Who knows? But our resources are not infinite. We have to decide where to send aircraft carriers, where to send forces, including tens of thousands of American soldiers. So if I was Russia or I was China, if I was America's enemies, I would be begging for them to go to war with Iran. It looks like we are. The U.S. moves more than 100 planes to Europe and the Middle East. This is from the Washington Post today. The U.S. military has rapidly increased its presence near Iran, shifting more than 150 aircraft to bases in Europe and the Middle East since a second round of nuclear talks between the United States and Iran ended without a breakthrough on February 17th, according to publicly available flight tracking data and satellite imagery reviewed by the Washington Post. The current presence of U.S. military forces in the region is among the largest for more than two decades, since before the Iraq War in 2003. The buildup comes after President Trump threatened to attack Iran unless a deal can be reached to restrict Iran's nuclear program. But again, that's not even accurate. That's not even what it's about anymore. They're talking about ballistic missiles. Why would you Why do they keep talking about the nuclear threat? Because that's the one that seems like it's worth going to war over. But that's not a threat anymore. That's not even really what's being talked about. Their ballistic missile program is being talked about, which is not a threat to the American homeland. And then you have the real problem, which is that story right there. Missed funerals and blocked toilets. Iran deployment takes a toll on U.S. sailors. This is from the Wall Street Journal. One sailor missed the death of his great-grandfather. Another is thinking about leaving the Navy after almost a year away from her toddler daughter. Two more said the ship had sewage problems. President Trump's decision to extend for a second time the deployment of the aircraft carrier USS Gerald R. Ford is taking a toll on the ship's sailors and their families, leading some to consider leaving the Navy when they return to their home port, according to interviews with sailors on board the ship and their family members back home. And so basically, the USS Gerald Ford was only supposed to be out for, I believe, something like a six-month mission. And they've been there for they've been out at sail for nearly 300 days at this point, which is kind of a brutal thing to do to your sailors, to be honest with you. I mean, it's difficult and sort of traumatic enough, especially for somebody with young kids, say goodbye to your child for months on end. Like, that is a massive sacrifice that you're asking people to make. Massive, like unimaginable. I wouldn't make it personally. I can't imagine not being there. Because like your kid, I mean, kids grow so fast. You don't see your kid for a week and it's like, who is this kid? You know, they change completely. Imagine your kid not recognizing you when you get home. Imagine, you know, not being able to like actually hold your child for several months on end. It's already such a massive sacrifice for these sailors to make. And then it's like, oh, by the way, we're extending it. Oh, by the way, we're extending it again. So now it's been a year. So now you leave like heartbroken that you're going to have to spend 6 months away from your kid. And then they just extended, you know, twice as much. Why? Because, you know, Israel loves killing kids. And if we don't destroy Iran, then they're going to have to pay a price for that. No wonder the sailors are clogging toilets. So apparently now the USS Gerald Ford is having these major sewage issues and they're like having to dock. It's like an emergency. They have to dock in Greece and aren't able to, you know, get to their station because they're being flooded with sewage water. And apparently that's on purpose, which is kind of like in the old days in wooden ships, there was a thing called like cannonball rolling. And basically like at night, there'd be this rumbling in the ship and it was the discontented sailors would just roll cannonballs down and it would like hit the feet of the officers. And it was a little symbol. It was like, we're not happy right now. Because forever and still to this day, mutiny is like an existential threat for the Navy. You get even just one sailor on board that starts like, you know, spreading discontent and dissension in the ranks. You can actually like lose a ship over that. They will literally commandeer it and take it to the enemy. Like that can happen. And it's a major concern. So like, this is a big risk these people are taking. People are actually flushing things down the toilet in order to clog it as a act of mutiny. Like, they could risk, you know, court-martial and execution over that. Tells you how they feel about what they're being asked to do and how they're being treated. And it's sort of making me second-guess the Seditious Six. Where are the Seditious Six around now? I mean, they were all eager to tell soldiers not to follow orders when you know, they were bombing Cuban or Venezuelan fishing boats. Where are they now? Can these soldiers refuse their orders? Would that be patriotic?
Ladies and gentlemen, methylene blue is incredible. And we have the very best you're going to find anywhere at thealexjonesstore.com. What it's done to my clarity, my mind, my focus has just been wild. My workouts have been so much better. We have the best, ultramethylene blue, at thealexjonesstore.com. Here's what some of the guests on the show experienced when they took it, and Joe Rogan and others talking about my transformation that methylene blue has been a big part of.
How is Alex doing these?
He's great. He lost a lot of weight.
I saw he's getting like... Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's ready for the next
week. My friend Sean Johnson's training him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he gets up every morning. He works out for fucking hours. He's lost, I think he's lost 70 pounds at this point. Hmm. He looks fantastic, man.
Yeah.
He looks fantastic. He looks like he's 20 years younger.
I saw Alex Jones, and he looks really good, doesn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, he's losing all weight. Taking back my health.
You're so good.
That's the only impression I could do.
Yeah, Alex looks good, man. Lost some weight. He looks good.
Dude, he looks great.
Yeah.
He works out every day. It's like no Ozempic, no bullshit. no shortcuts.
He's definitely one of my bucket list people to meet at some point.
Oh, I can introduce you to Alex.
Yeah.
We can make that happen for sure.
Come on. It's so noticeable. I was like, wow, he looks handsome.
But I text Alex all the time. I know him. He's just losing weight. But if you go online, there's a lot of people that believe that this is like a different person. He looks great. That's all it is. He looks great.
Here's your daily motivation. Alex Jones is 51 years old. He's been through more shit than you will ever go through. The deep state has come for his life. They have come for his business. They fined him billions of dollars for free speech. Alex Jones has had his rights stripped away. They've tried to take this man's life for speaking truth. Alex Jones went from looking like this to looking now like this. Alex Jones is getting ripped. Alex Jones is getting yoked, showing all of us that no matter our age, no matter what's thrown at us in life, no matter how many troubles or trials that we have, what really matters is who you are on the rock-ribbed inside. Do you have gunpowder in your gut? Do you have some grit in your teeth? Can you be a man in the face of all of it? Your promised struggles in this life, can you punch back? Alex Jones is a motivation and a vibe today.
I started having seizures like a few years ago, and everybody in my family knows I'm a neuroscientist.
What did you do to fix it?
Methylene blue.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mel Gibson was on here talking about it.
This stuff works, man.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic.
What is Bobby Kennedy Jr. dropping into that glass of water?
Plenty of folks are wondering what was in that little bottle he uncorked during a flight.
Methylene blue.
Show her Kennedy taking it. Kennedy literally gobbles it.
He must be doing something right. That ripped bod is 73 years old.
You shouldn't have to tell a doctor about methylene blue. I think everybody should know about it. It's changed my life.
It kind of gives you like a boost of energy. It's not like an energy drink where you get the jitters or like you're just ready for the day and you're never going to sleep. It's more so like it clears the brain fog where you're actually, you know, able to focus more clearly.
You feel instant energy, but without the jitteriness of caffeine and focus. What I felt was focus, mental focus.
For me, it's like a fog lifted, but it was like a veil lifted off, you know? Incredible.
It's really interesting. I almost like feel smarter.
With methylene blue, I do notice that it does seem to give me more mental energy.
I knew what that did for me. I knew that it got me up and walking again, and I was having seizures without it. And let me tell you something, what a blessing.
It is a miracle, and it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there. My kids take it, my wife takes it,
everybody takes it.
What a blessing. I don't care what anybody says. I know what it's like with it, and I know what it's like without it.
Yeah.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Folks, I got so many videos to show you and stories still to tell, and I want to take your calls in the final hour. But let's continue with what's going on in Iran here. I think this was a very good explanation of what's going on with the USS Gerald Ford by somebody named Shanaka Adenslam Pereira on X. They say this: the USS Gerald R. Ford has been at sea for 241 days. Her deployment has been extended twice. She's now heading back towards the Middle East for a third time, and the Wall Street Journal just published what the Pentagon does not want you to hear. Sailors are missing families, missing births, missing their children's first steps. The ship's sewage system is failing, requiring maintenance calls every single day, and acid flushes costing $400,000 each. Crew members are telling reporters that they want to quit the Navy. Morale is described in terms that defense journalists have not used since Vietnam-era reporting. This deployment is on track to reach 11 months. The post-Vietnam record is 294 days set by the USS Abraham Lincoln during COVID in 2020. The Ford will break it, and she's not coming home. Here's what the human toll can tell you about the strike calculus that no OSINT flight tracker can. The U.S. Navy operates 11 aircraft carriers. The Ford carries approximately 5,000 soldiers and over 75 aircraft, extending the deployment twice at enormous cost to crew retention, family stability, and mechanical readiness is not something the Navy does for leverage. The Navy fights extensions. Carrier groups, commanders fight extensions. The families lobby Congress to fight extensions. Extensions happen over institutional resistance when the mission authority, in this case the commander-in-chief, has determined that the asset cannot leave the theater. The Ford cannot leave the theater because nothing has replaced her, and the mission she was sent to support has not been completed or canceled. Think about what extended twice means operationally. The first extension signals that the original timeline was optimistic. The second extension signals that the mission itself has probably changed. You do not burn through crew morale, defer scheduled maintenance, and risk retention crisis across your most advanced warship for a contingency. You do it for a commitment. Now connect the dots. The Ford crossed into the Mediterranean on February 20th, adding her air wing to the 500-plus aircraft already in the theater, nine C-17s carrying 700 tons of munition en route, hundreds of personnel evacuated from Al Udeid, a P-8A is mapping the Straits of Hormuz, the IRGC is massing at the Iraqi border, Khomeini has activated shadow government protocols, Lindsey Graham is lobbying for strikes, Trump's deadline expires in days, and Witkoff just told Fox that Iran is 1 week from making bomb-making material, which is, again, absurd. The Ford's sailors are paying the human price of a decision that's already been made in everything but name. You don't break post-Vietnam deployment records, destroy your crew's families, and risk the readiness of your most expensive warship to park it in the Mediterranean as a prop. The $13.3 billion ship is not a negotiation tactic. It's a weapons delivery system and has been held in place at extraordinary cost because somebody in the chain of command has determined she will be needed. Sailors do not miss their children's births for bluffs. The stage is being set. The stage was set weeks ago. What you're watching now is the cost of holding the curtain. And that in response to the Wall Street Journal article about the massive toll that this deployment is taking on the U.S. sailors. So again, it's not just about recognizing the, you know, negative that this is inflicting on the Navy men that are being forced to deploy. It's about recognizing that that is being taken into account and that the cost is considered worth the expense, if you understand. The goal, I guess, is worth the risk that they're taking. It also concerns me because, as we know, the New World Order's absolutely favorite way of getting America into a war is by destroying a ship. The USS Maine, the Lusitania, the Gulf of Tonkin. I mean, this is a tried and true practice, right? The only time it really failed was the USS Liberty. And that was because they fought harder than the Israelis expected and refused orders to go down with their ship. But they're not, it's not unlikely that they try it again. And so I'm a little bit concerned that there's this ship, the USS Gerald Ford, that apparently is kind of a piece of junk, kind of has a lot of problems. Like, that's one of the things people are saying. Well, there's no evidence that the sewage crisis on board is deliberate, right? People are saying, well, their sailors are flushing their clothes down the toilet to deliberately clog the toilet to cause problems because they're not happy with their extended deployment. But other people are saying, well, no, it's just that the Gerald Ford has always had problems with this. They had to be repaired like 32 times in the last year. And it's like, huh, sounds like keeping this thing afloat is really expensive. Sounds like it might be a perfect target for an Iranian nuclear, you know, an Iranian ballistic missile to take out, to give us the casus belli to go in. I don't know if that's the case, but that's not, that is not without historical precedent. There was a move in the First World War. It was actually Winston Churchill designed this operation. I believe it was the Siege of Gallipoli, but it's the Strait of Istanbul. Right there. And basically, the plan was we can force our way through. The British Navy had this plan. I'm just blanking on the name, but I think it was Gallipoli. But basically, the plan was we have all these old ships that are kind of not fit for purpose anymore, so let's sacrifice the ships. I was like, well, we got all these ships. They don't really do much, but if we get enough of them and we just have them all attack the strait at once, some of them will get through. And it's fine if the rest don't because they're basically scrap anyway. And it didn't actually work because the captains of these ships were so, it was such an anathema to them to like sacrifice a ship. Like their whole point is you don't let the ship go. Like that's the whole point of them being captain. And like it was just so unnatural for them to like put their ships in harm's way that they didn't quite have the aggressiveness that they should have. And so the whole thing just turned into a giant debacle. And it forced Winston Churchill to retire. Like it was a total shameful embarrassment for the British military, the British Navy, and Winston Churchill like went into his, you know, period in the wilderness where he was totally out of power, in part because of his plan that completely failed. But that plan was at least predicated in part on the idea that they had all these ships they didn't need anymore, and so they wanted to find a useful use for them. So, yeah, I'm not saying that is necessarily why the USS Gerald Ford, in its dilapidated and dysfunctional state, is being placed within range of Iranian attack. But like I said, it wouldn't be without historical precedent, just so you know. All right, I think we can move on here. I think we've said enough about this before I just start to repeat myself. Except I'll just say as a very final note, this is from Sprinter Press on X, and it's, I guess, a selection from the American magazine called "Iran's Military Power Could Accelerate the Decline of U.S. Global Hegemony." An American magazine wrote, "What has deterred Washington from a military attack on Iran is Iran's real and significant ability to drag the U.S. and the entire region into a difficult and prolonged, exhausting war, which could unimaginably accelerate the process of the decline of the U.S. global hegemony." And so when you read this, you have to understand, and if you've been watching my show, you already know what I'm going to say. That's the point. That's the point. That's one of the reasons that they want to get America into war with Iran. The whole, like, we know their plan. Their plan is to start World War III, to finish the job of collapsing Western nation states, destroying the populations of Europe and America, and in the ashes of what promises to be a scorched earth type of conflict, they'll build the one world government. And of course, Israel will be a hegemon, as Benjamin Netanyahu keeps talking about, saying as soon as we spread peace to the whole area, by which he means takes out Iran, then we will be, you know, our own hegemony in the Middle East. Yeah. Iran's secret weapon is a plunger. So, you know, this is presented by Sprinter Press and others is like, what a, you know, this is a reason, you know, this is in the negative column. When you're weighing the pros and cons, this is firmly in that con section. It would really weaken America worldwide. And it's like, okay, but now think of the conflict through the eyes of the Jeffrey Epstein class, if you will, of the international masters of the world. They want America to go down. One of the main reasons they're getting us into war with Iran is because it's a very convenient way to massively weaken the American people and to cause just chaos and division here at home. I mean, they really would get absolutely everything they want if they could just get America to go to war with Iran. So we shouldn't do that. So I think we shouldn't do that is my take there. And actually, let's go to clip 29 here. This is Ted Cruz basically saying that it's been decided we are going to go to war with Iran. He, of course, is giddy at this, as we know what his priorities are. Let's watch.
We're at a moment, Joe, where in the next 6 months, we could realistically see the regimes in Iran, Venezuela, and Cuba all fall, and we could see them replaced with governments that want to be friends with America. Now let me be clear. There are 1,000 ways that can go wrong, so I'm not being Pollyannish about that. But if that happened, that would be the biggest geopolitical shift since the fall of the Berlin Wall. And so tonight, I expect the president to talk about historic successes over this last year, because it really has been an extraordinary year, both in national security and foreign policy, but also in domestic policy.
How would you, if you were the president, how would you approach Iran? What is it, another limited strike to try to prevent nuclear enrichment and to say we're serious? Do you go beyond that? Do you hope that somehow organically it happens? Because when you break it, when you own it and you break it, we know what's happened in the past. It's
not. So I talked to the president last week about this, and what I urged the president, I said, listen, the regime has never been weaker. They are teetering. There are real-world consequences to losing a war. The Ayatollah lost to Israel in the 12-day war. They are weaker. The regime is weaker than it ever has been. And what I've urged the president, do not miss this opportunity. If the Ayatollah is removed from power,
it will make America much safer. This is the leading state sponsor of terrorism in the world. The Iranian regime is responsible for murdering hundreds of American servicemen and women. They fund terrorists all over the world. And so what I've urged the president is, number one, support the protesters and arm the protesters. Let the people of Iran, give them the ability to overthrow their government. And number two, I think there's a very real possibility we will see, potentially in a matter of days, limited strikes. What we're not going to see is boots on the ground. We're not going to see a ground presence of American troops there, but I think there's a real possibility of targeted strikes that are designed to support the Iranian people who are protesting, not designed to put America in the middle of it, but designed this regime, the Ayatollah, when he chants death to America, I believe him.
Okay, yeah, well, okay. So apparently within the next few days, we'll see limited strikes. But Iran has said that they're going to respond to any strikes with overwhelming force. They apparently are not playing this game anymore. So I don't understand how that would work exactly. I mean, you can support limited strikes, but what happens when an aircraft carrier goes down? Are we going to back off? It's just so retarded. And literally, all the talk of nuclear enrichment, I mean, they don't even talk about that anymore. Now they're talking about ballistic missiles, which doesn't even make sense. You know, you got Witkoff being like, they are days away from being able to produce industrial missiles. And it's like, what does that even mean? They have thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of ballistic missiles. What are you talking about? What technology are they days away from achieving? Not nuclear technology. You're just buzzwords about ballistic industrial technology. Like, what are you talking about? They have literally nothing. Okay, so the whole nuclear thing, that's not really a good reason. The whole, oh, we're supporting the protesters, kind of falls flat when you also have your Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, bragging about creating the conditions that inspire the outrage. It's not exactly Iran is just, you know, the leadership is just naturally so hated. It's that the American government has deliberately waged economic war against Iran in order to infuriate the masses, which are, of course, being funded and empowered to a huge degree by Israel and America as we send in the Starlink, things that get confiscated, or all the Mossad agents that are going in and arming the protesters. And again, it's so funny that, like, if you were to say these protests aren't legit, this is Mossad, you know, going in and trying to cause problems, because there's videos of, you know, the protesters with Israeli weapons firing at Iranian state security forces trying to get, you know, a massacre to break out. You'd be called a conspiracy theorist, and how dare you, anti-Semite? And then it's like, well, just ask Ted Cruz. Ask Ted Cruz whether it's a crazy conspiracy theory to arm the Iranian protesters. He's advocating for it, and we're already doing it, so just stop. So again, it's like, who's the antagonist here? Who's the bad guy? I mean, Iran, again, doesn't have the ability to hurt us on the American homeland. They just don't. So all of this is all just in service of Israel, and not even Israel's existence, but their continuing destruction of their neighbors. Again, I just have to reemphasize that all of this is in service of Israel being able to carry out genocide unimpeded and unopposed. That's it. Not their existence, not their survival. Just their genocide. That's what all this is for. And it's just absolutely outrageous and ridiculous. And so despite the talk about nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles, in reality, those are not concerns of ours. No, it all goes down to they chant death to America. At the final hour, that's the excuse that they have to give us, is that people in Iran, who we have deliberately starved, who we bombed last year, who we have, you know, invoked and inspired riots that have left allegedly tens of thousands of people dead, and it's like they're supposed to love us? Yeah, I'd hate us too. What are you talking about? I don't know how to emphasize this enough. And I feel like I need to put it in some sort of new context or frame, because this is just what they're saying. This is what they're arguing. And I don't know why people treat it like it's reasonable. They're literally saying they're going to start World War III. They're going to go to war with a country significantly more powerful than a place like Iraq, which was a complete quagmire disaster for us. Because they chant words we don't like. Because their people oppose us and don't like us. Because we've been at war with them clandestinely for the last several decades. Like, this is unbelievably absurd. Unbelievably absurd. Like, insulting. And let's go to clip 49 here. Again, when it all comes down to it, this is the reason they want to send your sons and daughters to die, is because people in Iran, who we have antagonized relentlessly for decades on end, don't like us. Let's watch.
But what the United States is doing to ensure that not only America is the safest country in the world, but remains the strongest country in the world.
Do you consider Iran a threat that remains abroad?
Well, look, Iran chants death to America. So you tell me if that's a threat. Elena.
You tell me if that's a threat. I mean, they chanted death to America. Okay, well, so do half of the liberals at protests here in America. Can we kill them? I want you to kill them first. Then we can get to the people who don't have the ability to kill us, but generally want to. We go to war with people here. I mean, if that's what it takes, you know, apparently a population of people just chanting death to America. I mean, I've heard that from people here in America. Let's go to war with them. Can we bomb them? Can we drone strike them from the stratosphere? It's just the most, it's the most absurd thing you could possibly imagine. They chant death to America, therefore we need to go to war with them. That's retarded. It's very retarded. It's very sad. It's very sad that they're probably going to get their way, because it apparently does not matter what the American people want or whether it's conducive to the continuing existence of our nation. They're just going to do it. It honestly sucks. But we'll move on. Some very weird goings on here. Let's talk about Mexico. Let's talk a little bit about Mexico, shall we? Because there's a couple interesting things happening. Let's go to clip 21st. This is Mexico's defense secretary talking about where the weapons that the cartels are using come from. He's a little misleading. I'll clarify here in just a second. But obviously, there's continues to be this insurrection by the cartel in Puerto Vallarta. Let's go to clip 20. This is the Mexican defense secretary explaining where weapons are coming from. He says it's already been mentioned here. Speaking of the strategy in general, since the beginning of this administration, 23,000 weapons have been seized. Of those 23,000 weapons, 80% are of U.S. origin. So in this case, the proportion is roughly the same. Okay, so 80% of the weapons seized from the cartel waging war against their own government, 80% of those weapons are American in origin. Just a couple possibilities here. And probably all of these are true. One is that programs like Fast and Furious literally just directly shipped guns to the cartels. That definitely happened. That's proven and incontrovertible. Then there's the claims that we've heard a lot of, that the U.S. military, just like base commanders, will be in league with the Mexican cartels and will simply be selling their surplus weaponry for personal benefit. That's also happening, I'm sure, to a great degree. But then there's where the vast majority of these weapons come from, and that is that the American government sells them to the Mexican government, and the Mexican government sells them to the cartels, or the American government gives them to Ukraine, and the Ukrainian government sells them to the Mexican cartels. I know this because there's video of it. Let's go to clip 19 here. This is Mexican drug cartel gangsters fighting the Mexican government. These are the trucks that they're driving around, and they've got Ukraine flags on the side. Let's watch. So there you see the armored vehicles the Mexican cartels are using to wage war against their own government. And on the side, and you saw it in the first little frame there, is the Ukrainian flag. So this is an American military, you know, a piece of American military equipment that was given or sold to Ukraine that somehow made its way back to Mexico and is being used by Mexican cartels. So play that video again and just pause it in the first frame, and so just so people can see in case they missed it the first time. So right there. See the Ukraine flags right there on the side? The decals right there on the side? That's where it came from. Then you've got the Mexican government going, these are American resources that the cartels are using. Well, yeah, but they've been shipped to Ukraine first and then sold by Ukraine, or they've been shipped to Mexico and sold by the Mexican government, or by rogue base commanders here in America, or by deliberate programs like Fast and Furious, which supposedly was going to track weapons through the cartel networks, but didn't actually have a method to track them and didn't actually record their serial numbers. So in effect, they just gave a bunch of weapons. You know, it's like the scene from Monty Python and the Holy Grail when they build the wooden rabbit and the guys in the castle bring the rabbit inside, and then they're outside the castle and they're like, okay, so now at night when they all fall asleep, we jump out of the rabbit. And they all look around. They're like, wait, we're not inside there. Wait. We've missed a major point of what we're supposed to be doing here. That's what Fast and the Furious was. Well, we send them all the guns, and now all we have to do is track the guns. And they're like, wait, but we just sent the guns, and we have no way to track them. Crap. So again, was that an accident? Was that incompetence? Or was that America causing chaos in Mexico by funding them? Oh, yeah, they also trained in Ukraine, how Mexican cartels became militarized killing machines. Weapons from U.S., training in Ukraine. No evidence Ukraine sold U.S. weapons to Mexican cartels. No, there's just a Ukraine flag on the side of the car. I'm sure Mexico is, they're just liberals. It's just, they're just good liberals, and they're showing their allegiance by, you know, their support of Ukraine by displaying the flag, I'm sure. Yeah, this was Fast and the Furious. This was it. You send the weapons into Mexico with no way of tracking them, and only once the weapons have been dispersed do you look around at each other and say, well, wait a second. Well, wait a second. We're supposed to be tracking these things that we just sent in. Whoopsie daisy. That's it. That's how it goes. All right, we're going to open up the phone lines for your calls in the next hour. I also want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com. Right now you're getting 25% off our Methylene Blue bombshell product, game changer for everybody that tries it. And then Methylene Red pairs with Methylene Blue to maximize its power with a ton of great B vitamins and just other vitamins and minerals that you're not getting on a daily basis because our food has been completely denuded of nutrients, and you have to be supplementing no matter how healthily you eat. Do it at thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison to let them know who sent you, and we'll be right back.
You were just telling me that you had a brain disease, and what did you do to fix it?
I found this guy's a functional medicine guy, and he got me on Methylene Blue, and that instantly stopped everything.
I'd take it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I take it every day as well. And
yeah, RFK Jr. told me about it.
Yeah, man, it's fantastic. And so this guy's injecting in 1890, injects these rats with it, and then does an autopsy on these things, and their brain, the brainstem, every single nerve is blue. So he discovered this Methylene Blue has an affinity for neuronal tissue. So he says, well, it's sucking into neurons and working in the body. So we started putting it in humans, and we found out it's an MAOI, which helps with depression and anxiety and all kinds of life stress and stuff. It is so incredible that it acts as an electron donor to mitochondria, especially your neuronal mitochondria. So it helps you produce more ATP. And it helps you get rid of this stuff called reactive oxygen species. So you have an oxygen molecule that should have two hydrogens on it. And like your body's job is to convert stuff into water so you can pee it out. So if you get an oxygen molecule, it's got 4, 5, 1. It's a reactive oxygen, which we call free radicals. So Methylene Blue goes in there and balances a lot of those things out in your brain and your nervous system. So it is a miracle. And it's been proven for 100 years. It's one of the most well-proven drugs out there.
The strongest medical-grade Methylene Blue. And this is what I'm on. Total mitochondria cleaning. Next level energy. This is amazing. And you want to know what I'm on? Iris CMOS Shilajit. This right here. Look at that. That is power. I'm on intermittent fasting. I'm 8 to 3 o'clock today. And I stopped eating crap food, stopped drinking. That's what I'm on right there, baby.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.